Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Well, welcome back to part two. We're talking about Dixie Edwards today. I'm Mary Pero in studio with Cheryl Broderson, who's telling us an incredible story. In the last episode, we heard a little bit about Dixie's background, and she's just getting to a point where she's ready to transition. But what's been fun to hear about Dixie's story is just that her reluctance, her fear of the unknown. I think these are real things that we often don't want to talk about. Sometimes your husband's called and you're not so sure. So it's been a great story. If you haven't heard part one, you're going to want to catch up as we jump into part two.
You know, I love Dixie because I relate to her reluctance in so many areas, you know, like, oh, and again, she got married when she was 17. So that's got to be intimidating. You know, I have friends that got married when they're 18 and they always feel like, you know, maybe I missed out on something or maybe I got married too young. And there are always those kind of thoughts, especially as people are getting married older now and having, you know, their careers first and then they're having their children and you're like, oh, you're a doctor. I'm a wife. You know, I make a really good meatloaf. You know, you kind of have this intimidation. And she was constantly feeling intimidated, like the task was much greater than she was. But we'll see as we go through her life that she always rose to the task by the strength that the Lord gave her. And as we mentioned before, Philippians 4:13 was her favorite scripture. And she clung to it like a lifeline. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So at this point, Max has taken a church pastorate at a church called Peaceful Valley. And she never imagined he'd be a pastor. She thought she was marrying a farmer. And he's still a farmer, but he's also a pastor. He's gotten just on fire for the Lord, just this unquenchable fire. And reluctantly, she just says, all right, Lord, I already gave you my life. You can have everything. I'll follow. And she goes and she becomes the pastor's wife at Peaceful Valley. Well, that's not the end of it. Max begins to get really interested in missionary endeavors. And one of the missionaries that comes to speak is from Hong Kong. Another is from Brazil. And Max says, I want to support the missionary work in Brazil. I'm feeling really strongly about that.
Okay, we know where this is going.
Yes. So he has a hog farm along with the rest of it. He raises hogs and he raises corn for the hogs. And he says, Lord, if you bless the corn crop on this one field, I'll give you all the money. Well, oh my, did the Lord bless it. And he took all of the money he made and he gave it to the missionary endeavor in Brazil. And they were able to buy a van that they desperately needed in Brazil. Now, in 1967, you know, Max has kept up this correspondence and with this missionary and really excited about all that the Lord is doing in Brazil. He felt called to go and visit the missionaries. Dixie flatly refused. A friend challenged Dixie, said, have you prayed about it? Listen to Dixie's response. You're going to love this. No, Dixie said, I don't pray about things I don't want to do. No, you just love that. I mean, how honest is that?
Right.
If I don't want to do it, I'm not going to pray about it.
Yeah.
So reluctantly, she prayed about it. And the Lord told her she was supposed to go. The Lord even provided the money through the farm's second year success. And Max and Dixie flew to Sao Paulo. And Max was enamored with Sao Paulo and with Brazil. And guess what Dixie was? Terrified.
Unimpressed.
So terrified. The second week, they were in a place called Londrina. And they visited various churches. And Max shared via a translator. I mean, Dixie is saying, this is so far from anything I feel comfortable with. She doesn't feel comfortable with Max preaching. She doesn't feel comfortable with being in a different country. She doesn't feel comfortable being away from, you know, the sunbeams. She is just so uncomfortable. Not only that, but neither Max nor Dixie had ever eaten garlic before. And everything in Brazil smelled like garlic. And that was their first time they'd ever tasted garlic. But she did love the Brazilian bread.
Yes.
She had to admit that. Now, Dixie prayed. And this is what she prayed as they're going to these different churches. Lord, thank you for not calling us to be missionaries. I could never attain what I see in these dedicated servants of yours. I am simply not smart of this. Hmm. For Dixie, this trip confirmed her desire to be a farmer's wife in rural Indiana. Mm-hmm. She just loved her life. She said, oh, I love my life. I appreciate it even more, but not Max. Max was feeling called to return as a missionary. And this is Dixie's next prayer. Oh, Lord, I'm just now recovering from the transition from my church to the one we're pastoring. But surely, Lord, when we get home and Max gets back with the church and his hogs, he'll forget all about Brazil. Surely. However, once home, Max was more convinced than ever that they were being called to Brazil.
Yeah, he saw those hogs and thought of Brazilian barbecue.
That's right.
I got to get back there.
Put some garlic on them. Dixie prayed for the strength, Philippians 4:13, to accompany her husband wherever the Lord called him. Hmm. As Max began to make preparations to go to Brazil, Dixie confessed her fears to Max. Max, she said, I don't want to go. I'm scared. Max replied, I'm scared too, Dixie, but the center of God's will is always the safest place to be. Then they prayed together. Dixie still hoped that Max would be dissuaded. In fact, Max's mother called Dixie on the phone and said to her, Dixie, the whole family is concerned that this might not be a good thing for you and your family. You're the only one who can talk Max out of this. I know that puts you in a hard place, but... And all of a sudden, Dixie found herself saying, Mom, I can't do that.
Mm.
And that was the first time that she was like, wait, no, I have to support my husband. This is God. Mm-hmm. I can't try to talk him out of something that God's telling him to do. Max filled out the application to be an OMS missionary. And Dixie wrote out her objections. So when Max is filling out the forms, Dixie is writing down her objections. I love this woman. So number one, they didn't know the language, Portuguese. Number two, she didn't like the lifestyle. She was a farmer's wife. Number three, her children's schooling. She didn't want to send them away to school and felt inadequate to homeschool them.
That's a big concern for a lot of people.
Oh, it's huge. So Dixie prayed over these things every day. However, she realized that if God was leading, he would help both of them in all those areas. God gave her 2 Corinthians 12:9. My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me.
Amen.
She realized that God was calling her beyond herself. They were accepted with a few conditions to meet first. Dixie was scared, and Max was elated. The song, Leaning on the Everlasting Arms, became her theme song. What have I to dread? What have I to fear? Leaning on the everlasting arms. I have blessed peace with my Lord so near, leaning on the everlasting arms. Hmm. Dixie was 28, and the month was January of 1957. She said she was seated at the piano in the church, playing and singing, leaning on the everlasting arms. I got through the first two verses, and then, what have I to dread? What have I to fear? It was the message I needed to hear. It was God's word to me that morning. He spoke, I listened, and the peace came as I embraced this truth. God met the need of my heart in that moment, and I knew I could trust him. I was young then. She's writing this towards the end of her life. Now I've lived my life leaning on the everlasting arms. Surrender is safe. The arms are there, but we won't experience them unless we fall into them, let down our weight, and make him the absolute first in our lives. January of 1968, the family drove down to Fort Wayne, Texas, to begin their missionary training. Dixie pored over a map of Fort Wayne so that she could find the right school for her children and thought, what have we gotten ourselves into? They were both having to go to school. The training was for both of them, not just Max, but Dixie. They had the same classes, the same Bible classes. School was easy for Dixie, but Max struggled. Dixie struggled with everything else, but not school. She struggled with her time management. Jay was having nightmares at this time, and the absence of family and everything that was familiar. Dixie was overcome with paralysis, and Max recognized it as spiritual warfare. She confessed to the Lord, "I cannot manage this new life. I am a misfit. I will not succeed. Max would be better off without me." Then she felt a voice prompting her, "Then wreck the car. Just crash. And just let Max have the opportunity to have another wife." And suddenly she realized that it was spiritual warfare.
Wow.
That everything, the paralysis, all the fears, was that she had been listening to the whispers of the enemy. Suddenly she cried out in the car, "Get thee behind me, Satan," and then, "Help me, Jesus." And she realized that she was called alongside Max to go and serve in Brazil, and the devil didn't want them there.
Wow.
News came. Then, right after this, when she's again just resigned, "All right, Lord, I know what this is," that Max was failing in all of his classes. Max actually had dyslexia. So it looked as if God was closing the door when suddenly a professor took Max aside and prayed for him. And from that time forward, Max got all A's and B's, mainly A's. I mean, just everything changed through prayer.
Yeah, it's even as you're sharing where Dixie is talking about her fears. And I think as believers, sometimes we're like, well, no, you know, you're being negative, what have you. But her actually vocalizing all those fears gave opportunity for the Lord to answer every single one.
Absolutely.
And through prayer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think that our dishonesty in prayer does us a disservice and does others a disservice.
Yes, it does.
Because they don't get to see they don't get to know reality, and they feel like misfits, like, oh, I should have always been really excited about this, and my feelings are wrong, so obviously God's not calling me. And that's like a misrepresentation of truth.
And it gives the enemy more room to come in with these crazy thoughts, as she experienced.
Exactly. So in September of 1968, Max and Dixie began an internship at Central Free Will Baptist Church. Got to get that out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're not Reformed. They're Central Free Will Baptist in Detroit. Now, the church loved Max and Dixie and even offered Max the pastorate. And that was a temptation because they were so successful and the church began to grow while they were there.
And they're just there to get the missionary training, right, to go to Brazil?
It's just an internship.
Okay.
Like, serve here until the time comes. Well, also, OMS then calls them up and says, we want you to also go to these missionary camps and help host these missionaries as they come. OMS had a camp and, you know, go serve there. So Max and Dixie would go for 4 weeks and serve the missionaries and the retreat center. And then they would go back and they would serve at the church in Detroit. About this time, somebody gave Dixie the book by Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest. Mm. And that became just something that she took with her everywhere, her favorite devotional. At the same time, Dixie felt the Lord correct her. She's getting really into the work because she can hide behind work, right, at doing these missionary retreats. And the Lord spoke to her and said, "My child, you are not delighting in me. You are delighting in the work." Dixie knew it was true, and she surrendered again. Because, you see, she felt better about herself when she could work, when she could do something. And when she wasn't doing, she felt disqualified.
Insecure.
And so the Lord said, "I'm your doing. I want you to focus on me and just make me first, and then the work will follow. But make it about me." In 1969, they moved back to Winchester to complete their last phase of training. Max farmed 80 acres in Winchester, and the family actively began to raise missionary supports. They not only raised the funds that they needed for the first year, they exceeded the amount, and this is why. Dixie had begun to train her three children musically, and they formed a band called the Three J's. Remember, it's J.D., it's Jan, and it's Jeffrey. And they were in high demand at all the churches in Indiana. So they would go to all these different churches and the Three J's would sing. And then they would say, you know, "We're going to Brazil. Would you be willing to give? Would you be willing to support?" And of course, while they sang, Dixie accompanied them on the organ or piano, whatever they had. Max sold his farm, and a local newspaper picked up their story, and more money poured in from the story of these, you know, this young couple that's going to Brazil. Dixie cried a lot, but refused to complain. In January of 1970, they went to Miami, Florida, and loaded onto the Leonardo da Vinci, which was a cruise ship that was headed to Sao Paulo. They had barrels with them that contained all their clothes, their dishes, tools that they would need, and, you know, everything else. The voyage was 12 days long. Max and the kids were ecstatic, and Dixie was willing. However, even as she walked off the ship to Brazil, she prayed, "Lord, you can stop this still if you want to, and if it's not your plan." Yet at the same time, she said, "Lord, if it is your will, Jesus, be my rock. Be my rock, no matter what your will is." God spoke to her heart. "I'm only requiring your love and your obedience. I will supply whatever else is needed."
I love that.
You just love me. You just do it. And I'll supply the attitude. I'll supply the heart. I'll supply everything that you need. All the abilities. The first night was in Rio de Janeiro. The next day, they drove 300 miles to the city of Campinas. They lived there for over a year, learning the language and getting used to life in Brazil. Occasionally, they would visit Sao Paulo, which was overly crowded, very congested. Faithfully, every week, Dixie wrote letters home describing their adventures and their lives. It is from those letters that her granddaughter compiled the material to write the book about Dixie and Max called Boldly I Obey. And I think that's why we've got these honest confessions, too, of Dixie, because, you know, they're from her letters. Mm-hmm. And she actually helped her granddaughter write this book, which I think is so sweet. Now, the Edwards entertained constantly, something they both loved. And here's a secret that the Edwards had. They had an ice cream maker that they brought with them, and they made ice cream every night.
Brilliant.
That was just a treat for the kids and something to draw the locals in and other people to serve them. So every night they would invite anyone they could in for ice cream. After a time in Campinas, they stopped attending the American church in favor of a Brazilian church so they could better learn the language and meet the people. OMS then assigned Max and Dixie to a campground they had just purchase that they wanted Max to turn into a campground for OMS. It was a 10-hour trip from Campinas, where they were living, Campinas, to a remote town called Panorama. Now, Panorama was filled with snakes. They had to cross the Paraná River. Now, that tells you something right there, right? If you're crossing the Paraná River to get there.
Yeah, and Dixie's already saying, "Lord, I do not have to do this.
I am scared." The people did not have cars, and the nearest city was 45-minute drive away through these back jungle trails. Dixie was so scared of the snakes, and she just was always cognizant of, like, looking for snakes. The place also had rats, monkeys, and other wildlife that was so unlike Indiana. The house on the property was barely inhabitable, but Max, with the help of visiting teams, turned it into a home. But you'll find out it still had problems even after that. Max also rebuilt dormitories for the next few years, and Max and Dixie would then hold retreats for missionaries as well as evangelistic camps for nearby children. The campsite, this is Dixie wrote, consists of a small main house, two dormitories, a kitchen and dining hall building, and a chapel that is ready to collapse. Sounds great, and it would be, with lots of improvement, repair, and a manager. Huh. We are appointed to be that manager. Dixie taught the kids at home while they lived at Panorama, and the children thrived. Jay collected over 26 different snakes, all poisonous, and put them in jars. He wasn't afraid of them at all. He also had a few piranhas in a jar. For pets, the children at one point had a monkey. They had guinea pigs and their beloved dogs. The kids swam, boated, and had the run of the camp in spite of the alligators, crocodiles, piranhas, and other wildlife. In December of that year, Dixie began to feel unwell. She realized that she was pregnant, and she hoped for a little girl. However, she gave birth to a boy via C-section, which she had to drive her to the hospital 45 minutes away in August of 1971, and they named him Joey. So all their kids have these J names, if you haven't noticed. Life was not easy in Panorama. As Dixie wrote, the roof leaked, the toilets rarely work, and everything we plant is eaten by insects. They were short on funds, struggled with homesickness, and mail delivery was inconsistent. And they were still struggling, even then, with the language. They spent 5 years at Panorama, and they saw over 300 men and women come as work crews to help them build it. They were not only able to remodel the camp, but they saw thousands of children come through the camp, all touched by Jesus in some way. Both Max and Dixie would teach at the camps, Dixie usually doing classes for women and children. OMS soon put Max in charge of a church planting in San Paulo. This is a long drive, too. Mm. This meant less time for Max at the campground. A new ministry started in Dracena in June of 1972. Dixie wrote, after 2 years of toil, tears, and frustration with the language, we're beginning to know the satisfaction of being used by God. We're feeling accepted by the people and are quite burdened for the church, which thrills us. There are many harrowing experiences beyond the wildlife. Yet the Lord miraculously protected the whole family. In June of 1973, so this is why they're still at Piranha, it was time for the Edwards to take their first furlough. They returned to Indiana for 1 year, and the children enrolled in American schools. On weekends, the Edwards would visit different churches. Max spoke, Dixie played the piano, and the three J's sang. While in Indiana, Max, this is their first furlough, slipped on the ice and broke his kneecap. And he had to be fitted with a brace, but nothing stopped Max. They returned to Panorama in June of 1974. In June of 1975, they experienced a particularly cold winter. Dixie was working in the kitchen preparing a huge meal for a visiting team. She leaned back against the stove to get warm and to rest a bit when she felt heat surging up her back. She was on fire. One of the visitors tackled her to the ground and stomped out the flames. Dixie had second-degree burns.
Oh, no.
But they healed quickly. The fire only singed her hair. However, God used the experience to touch many of the hearts that were in Panorama. Another thing that Dixie would comment about is because she had brought her children and then had a baby in Brazil, that the Brazilians, the women, felt this affinity with her, even though she was an American. They treated her like, well, you're one of us. You've learned our language. You have children here, too. You know a mother's heart. While still in Panorama, the time came that Dixie dreaded when she had to send her children away to school. The school was over 500 miles away. Year by year, Dixie had to let her children go, first Jay, then Jan, followed a year or two later by Jay. Dixie kept little Joe at home. In March of 1975, the three J's wrote a song about their 16-hour train ride from school to Panorama.
Oh, my.
I'm sitting in a railway station, got a ticket to my destination. Drenched with rain alone, I stand, my suitcase and guitar in hand, waiting for the train to pass to take me where I want to go at last. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home where my family's waiting. Home where the sun is shining. Home, yeah, that's where I want to go. 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles. Lord, I'm 500 miles away from home. I spent my time in a place where you have led me. I've gone away to a place that I didn't know. You gave me strength to go on when I was lonely. But now, Lord, I want to go home. New Year's of 1976, the three J's recorded their second record. And that song was one of the featured songs that
definitely
was.
Sounds like it would have been Dixie's favorite.
I think.
Want to go home.
I want to go home. October of 1976 brought changes. The Lord didn't tell us the way the Lord didn't tell us the way would always be easy, did he? I praise him anyway, knowing that where he guides, he provides all that we need to serve him effectively. That's a letter from Dixie when they've been in Brazil for 6 years. Jay graduated from high school and left for college to be an aspirant in the U.S., and Dixie and Max, with Joe and Jeff, moved to Sao Paulo. Max commuted between Sao Paulo, Londrina, and Panorama. While Max was gone, the house was robbed, and the robbers stole their TV, clock radio, and other electronic devices. Just pleasure stuff, Max would comment later. However, the robbers hadn't taken the musical instruments, Dixie's sewing machine, or the money hidden in the house. All in all, they considered it a mercy. So we've got them all the way to Brazil, though Dixie's reluctant, she's beginning to thrive, even mm-hmm. though she's dealing with a lot of heartache, sending away her children to mm-hmm. school. She at least has her youngest son with her. But things are going to change again. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, one change after another. And we're going to watch reluctant but obedient and loving
Thank you
Dixie.
For listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.